When Harry Pollack left Czechoslovakia for France in the autumn of 1938, he had no idea what the future would hold for him. As a teenager, he joined the exiled Czechoslovak army, fought the Nazis who murdered his family, before fleeing his country again after the communist coup of 1948, and built a career in England from scratch. Mr. Pollack gives an account of his extraordinary life in his recently published memoirs. In this edition of Panorama, Jan Richter talks to Harry Pollack about how a boy from a South Bohemian village ended up saving the famous British carmaker Aston Martin.
Harry Pollack still speaks fluent French, the language he learned as a student at a lyceum in Nîmes in the late 1930s. His departure for France saved his life. He was one of several Czech students who left Czechoslovakia only months before Nazi troops marched in. He was happy to learn he was among those selected to study abroad. But then came the Munich Agreement, and it seemed he was not going to leave after all.
At the original start of the school year, we were informed that the trip was off. We were already with my mother and my luggage in Prague, ready to go, and we had to find our luggage among all the other luggages of refugees in Masarykovo Nádraží in order to return, and I was reconciled myself that the whole thing is off. In point of fact, my wife brought me to Roudnice, which was then the nearest accessible Czech gymnasium, and enrolled me there, and I was there for a month. Then the news came that the thing is on again.
As the 15-year-old Jindřich, as he was called back then, said goodbye to his mother at the Prague train station, he didn't suspect he was seeing her for the last time. When he arrived in Nîmes, Mr. Pollack says the French were still embarrassed by selling out their Czechoslovak allies to Hitler in the Munich Agreement, and could not believe their eyes that Czech students were coming as if nothing had happened.
When we arrived in this place, Nîmes, there was a kind of reception as of if we were VIPs, because the French had real politically, the educated French had a bad conscience about the way how the Czechoslovak Republic was treated by Dadje in Munich, where they were left high in, well, all the contracts which they had were not respected, but it didn't take long, and this kind of feeling of guilt wore off, as it happens in politics.
At the age of 17, Harry Pollack joined the exiled Czechoslovak armed forces that had formed in France to fight against Nazi Germany. After the collapse of France, the army was transferred to England, which was the first but not the last time Harry Pollack set foot on British soil. After the Allied invasion of Europe, he was one of the Czech soldiers who laid siege to the German-held city of Dunkirk in September 1944 and finally returned to his native country in May 1945.
We were all very anxious to get home. You know, and we were received with pomp by everybody. You know, it felt very nice. Mind you, it was not without shadows. You know, when we arrived at the border, we were then kept in quarantine for 3 days in a textile mill for no apparent reason. There was a rumor that the Russian headquarters in Prague, when they found out that our armed brigade had about 100 tanks, they were worried because a Russian armed brigade had 16 tanks, and you know, such it could mean mischief, particularly coming from the West. This was the rumor.
This rumor might have been untrue, but Czechoslovakia was soon on its way to becoming little more than a Soviet colony. Harry Pollack says he was aware what was happening, but he was hoping he would not have to leave his country again.
To tell you the truth, I was aware that the political situation was changing, and it was disfavorable to me. But I was reluctant to consider any alternative. You see, I would put it that way. I was once an emigre, and I didn't want to be an emigre again, because it's not a very pleasant situation to be as an immigrant in a foreign country, whatever the situation may be.
The uncertainty about the future direction of Czechoslovakia only lasted until February 1948, when the Soviet-backed Communist Party staged a coup and took power. The new regime immediately began persecuting all its real and imaginary enemies, and Harry Pollack, having fought against the Nazis on the wrong front, was deemed one of them.
The communist regime, first of all, took away my degree because I was judged to have a hostile attitude to the Lidovye Demokratitsky regime. And then they confiscated, then because I couldn't find an employment, I went back to the farm, which up to that time I inherited and rented out. And for a year I farmed the farm. And then they took away the farm because they said, I am an engineer, although they took away my degree, and I am not justified to run a farm.
With literally no possibility to make a decent living, Mr. Pollack, then 25 years old, had to make the difficult decision to leave his country yet again. This time he would have to wait for more than 40 years to be able to come back.
I had nothing, no alternative but to have to run away. And then I had to run away across the border, across Šumava, across Boubín. At the end of November, there were 10 centimeters of snow, 20 kilometers during the night across the border. And it was one of the small miracles that I had in my life, that first of all, I was capable to endure it. And secondly, that I had the luck that I was not interfered with one of the contraptions that were in the way.
Back in England, Harry Pollack looked around for a job, but the start of the Cold War was not the best time for an engineer who came from a communist country.
I had a long and a very successful career in England. When I came to England, I had actually a difficulty to find a job at all, because it was at the time the famous trial of Fuchs. That was the German scientist who gave atomic secrets to the Russians during the war. And therefore, an immigrant, whoever he was, had no chance to get a job. I was then a qualified engineer, and there was not enough of them. But whenever I went for an interview and said that I am a foreigner, there was no chance.
But eventually he did find a job with a company that made air conditioning equipment, and step by step he moved up the company ladder. He eventually became a consultant in a US firm and worked in Germany, England, Belgium and other countries. He specialized in financial consultancy, but it took some years before the deal of his life finally came.
I got in touch with a company in Birmingham called Company Developments Limited. They were financiers who were looking for opportunities to exploit just such situations. And we came to an agreement, and I became a member of their board, and I was engaged in different companies doing exactly that. Hmm. And well, whilst I was in Switzerland skiing in February 72, there came a telephone call from them, come back quickly, we have an opportunity to buy Aston Martin and you have to look at it whether it is a proposition, which I did, and we did.
The company's owner, Sir David Brown, was anxious to get rid of Aston Martin because it never made a profit. Harry Pollack and his associates, however, were able to bring the firm into black numbers in much less than a year.
It was a very successful effort. We bought it in February, and in 6 months' time, we had it in profit for the first time in its history. And this is one of the saving efforts of mine in this book. And the people in Mladá Fronta had the bright idea that this is something which will catch the public eye. And we wrote to Aston Martin to ask them whether we can use this car on the... And so it happened.
Harry Pollack, who is 87, now lives in Switzerland. The cover of his memoir sports a picture of Aston Martin's Vantage model, produced after the successful takeover of the firm. Mr. Pollack says the Czech publisher asked Aston Martin for permission to use the photo, which the company gladly gave. He says he originally wrote his memoirs with the subtitle The Man Who Saved Aston Martin in English, so that his son could learn about what his father had been through.
The original manuscript was in English. It was produced in 1993 for my son. We have one son who lives in England, in Kent, and he doesn't speak anything but English. And so I wrote this story of our life for him so that he would know where our families came from and also all the troubles that we had in our lives.